In last week's episode, we talked about dealing with teacher burnout, and I shared a process that I found personally really helpful for auditing my work and just reflecting on my practice. So if you did not listen to episode 121, which was the one just before this, it might be worth giving a listen, because at the end of that episode, I really encouraged some of you to maybe consider a change of scenery before you jump to the extreme of considering a change of career and leaving the education field altogether. And so if that is the case and you're considering a change in scenery, maybe to a different school, maybe a different district, that means you may have a job interview coming up. And so in today's episode, we are going to tackle a question I get asked all of the time, and that is any tips I have for a teacher job interview. So we're going to talk exactly about how to do that. I have four really practical tips for you. Plus, I'm also going to share my best recs if you're asked to do a mock lesson with either a classroom of students or, much worse, a classroom of faculty and your potential future coworkers as a part of your interview, because I know that that can happen too. So without further ado, let's get to today's episode. This is Secondary Science Simplified, a podcast for secondary science teachers who want to engage their students and simplify their lives. I'm Rebecca Joyner from It's Not Rocket Science. As a high school science teacher turned curriculum writer, I am passionate about helping other science teachers love their jobs, serve their students, and do it all in only 40 hours a week. Are you ready to rock the time you spend in your classroom and actually have a life outside of it? You are in the right place, teacher friend. Let's get to today's episode. Let's start by talking about your interview, and then we'll get into the mock lesson component, because I know that's not always a requirement of the job interview process. So let's start with how to nail your interview. The first thing you need to do is you need to come prepared. And I know that sounds really obvious, so let's talk about what I mean about that specifically. You need to come prepared to be able to articulate your teaching philosophy. Even if they don't explicitly ask you, what's your teaching philosophy? That is something that's going to come out as you speak about yourself. So really take some time to think through, what is my overall philosophy of education? What do I find the most important? What are the things that I value the most? What are the things that I put my most time and energy into? What are my priorities? Okay, that's going to kind of make up your teaching philosophy. I really think coming up with a way that you can explain that really succinctly is a good idea in case they ask you that direct question. But even if they don't, it's something you can weave in throughout your answers to other questions. So really think through big picture themes of who you are as a teacher and what you believe about education and why you're even in education in the first place. The next thing you need to do to come prepared is you need to consider your strengths and weaknesses. Again, this is something that's almost always going to be explicitly asked, but it may not be, and it's something you want to highlight, especially those strengths. Think of 3 to 5 things that you're really, really good at and be prepared to communicate that with specific examples. I think that is a game changer. Like if you're trying to express your strengths and you're just like, I'm great with students, I'm organized, like what does that look like? What does it look like that you are great with students, especially if you have past teaching experience? How has that played out before? If you're a brand new teacher and, you know, you don't have any teaching experience, maybe other than your, you know, practicum experiences or your student teaching experience, point to specific instances from that. If you have absolutely no teaching experience and you're coming to a job interview because you're coming to education as a second career, maybe you're doing an alternative certification process. So like you're going to get all of your classroom training from this job if you get it. Okay. If that's the case, don't try to force it. Like you don't have experience in the classroom. That's fine. But you are bringing something really unique to the table. And that is your experience in the outside world. And so really lean into what those strengths are. What are those skills you learned in your previous employment that are now going to be really beneficial to you in the classroom? Okay, there are so many things that this could be. So really think through your strengths. Also think through your weaknesses. I know, you know, this is kind of like an old school question, but I do feel like it comes up a lot, and I think you need to have a real answer for it. It's easy to craft an answer where you basically make up a weakness that you can really twist and make it be a strength. But I think actually highlighting an honest weakness is a better way to approach this. For example, I actually think it's better to take one of the strengths that you've already highlighted and acknowledge where there is weakness in it. I think it's an act of humility to be able to admit that. And also, I just think it makes it a lot more approachable because you're already saying, like, this is something I'm really good at. But in humility, I'm going to confess that this is where weakness lies. So for example, for me, one of my strengths is I run a really tight ship, okay? I really have a firm grip on how my classroom is run, on my procedures, and on organization. That is a strong suit of mine. It's a way that my brain is wired to really hold to the schedule, hold to the timers, keep the class moving. I run at a fast pace, and thus I actually find that one of my weaknesses is I can struggle with flexibility. I can struggle when there's an interruption for a fire drill and, you know, a pep rally. And that is one of my weaknesses, is flexibility within that capacity. And it's something I'm working to grow by trying to hold things a little bit more loosely. Like, you know, come up with a way that you're trying to work on it. But again, being fully honest, like, that is a true weakness of mine. I'm not masking it as a strength. I'm actually bringing it into the light and saying, this is a weakness that is because of my strength. And I just think that humility is going to go a long way in being really approachable and feel like attractive in terms of what you would want in a personnel who works for you. Okay, so you're coming prepared with your thinking through your teaching philosophy, your strengths, your weaknesses. That's all mental, but physically, you're also coming prepared with a binder. Okay, I know this is old school and maybe you want to do like an iPad instead, but I never like to rely on Wi-Fi or technology. But I still think it's so important to bring a binder with you that serves as a portfolio to represent who you are as a teacher on paper. So I think at the beginning, you have your cover letter and your resume, which they've probably already seen. If you can have any written recommendations for the people that you have, you know, phone numbers for, I think written recommendations in there is great. I would have your transcripts, you know, maybe your GRE scores, your Praxis scores, if those are relevant to you and where you are. These are especially good things if you're coming fresh out of college. Like, you're not going to have a lot of stuff to put in this binder, so put these in there and get a nice skinny binder so it doesn't seem like it's just empty. Okay, put those things in there. And then if you have teaching experience, I also really recommend put in a sample unit plan, put in a sample lesson plan, put in some sample instructional resources that show the types of things you like to do with students. I think any hard copy samples of your strengths, put them in. So think through those things that you just identified as strengths. Like, for example, I said one of my strengths is really keeping the pace of the class, really running a tight ship. I would put in my anatomy of a class period cheat sheet and say, this is how I tend to break down a class period. This is one class period broken down. And then maybe I would put in my sheet that I use with students at the beginning of the year that kind of has all my procedures, you know, that I kind of train my students in those first few weeks of school. Maybe I'm including a copy of that so that when you are talking about things, you have something physical and visual you can point to. Now, some of the people you interview with are not going to be visual people, so they just won't care. They just want to hear you talk. But I have had other interviews where they've been like, can I keep this binder for a little bit? And I say, absolutely. And then I ask when I can, you know, pick it up again. Or better yet, if you get more of those like project or report protectors that are like plastic, so they're really thin, it's not like a straight up binder, those are a lot cheaper. You can get them for 99 cents, $2, that kind of thing. If you keep this really narrow, then you could have five of these and you could leave them with a copy. I think that's even better. I got to the point where I just had this one like giant binder because another one of my strengths is curriculum design and creating instructional resources from scratch. And I wanted to highlight that in my interviews. So I actually had a full unit before they became It's Not Rocket Science units and they were just Rebecca Joyner using in her classroom units. Like, I had a full one printed out with all of my stuff, sans implementation notes, because those didn't exist when I was the only one implementing. But I had a full binder like that. But I think if you can make, you know, some sort of little portfolio that you're leaving with them that's visual, I think that's really impactful. And it shows that you took the time to prepare for this interview. So that's my first tip to nail your interview. Come prepared. Think through those questions, practice answering them with someone you know and love, and have that binder or that report that you can physically and tangibly give them. The second thing is be honest and be yourself. Here's the deal. I think sometimes we have this ideal of the type of teacher we should be or that people are looking for, when the reality is that every admin is really looking for something and someone different. What might be a pro for one admin is actually a con for another. Okay, so for example, my senior year of college, when I was first interviewing for teacher jobs, I had a scholarship to my undergraduate program that included 2 years of grad school. So that spring of my senior year, I had already applied and gotten into Clemson's graduate program for curriculum and instruction and curriculum development for secondary science. I knew I was going to be doing that at nights and over the summer, my first few years in the classroom. Okay, so I remember distinctly telling one admin who I interviewed with that I was going to be doing this, and he straight up told me at the end of the interview, hey, this was a great interview, but I'm just going to let you know I'm not going to hire you because in 2 years when you get your master's, I'm going to have to give you a pay grade, and I don't have it in my budget to do that. So I'm actually looking for someone who will be cheaper. Like, that is straight up what he told me, okay? Whereas then I went to another interview and I didn't even mention this, but that admin saw my GRE scores. He saw those in my binder that I had come with, and he said, hey, why'd you take the GRE? And I said, well, you know, I kind of mentioned a little bit more sheepishly, I'm actually going to be doing this graduate program. And he loved it. He said, I absolutely love that you're doing continuing education. You're going to bring so much more to the classroom. Like, this was actually a pro for this admin. And so that's just one example, but there's so many too. Like, every school has such a different culture and dynamic, and even every department. And those admin, hopefully, if they're good admin, they know the vibe of the department and they know who they need that will fit in well there. And so you just never know. And so I think it's really important that you just are yourself. The worst case scenario here is you fake who you are and then they hire fake you. And then you get there and it's a terrible fit for everyone involved. I once heard someone say that dating is all about concealing and then marriage is fully revealing, and how it should really like be the opposite. Like, when we're dating, we should reveal ourselves in our entirety to someone so they know what they're committing to before they commit. You know what I mean? And I kind of feel that way about the job interview. Like, obviously have some tact, but at the same time, don't just try to be someone you're not. You know, like, if you do not have this outgoing, high energy personality, don't fake it that way. Don't drink a Red Bull before you get in there and go crazy. At the same time, if you do have a louder, more, the word coming to mind because I'm thinking of myself is like aggressive, but I don't like that word because it feels negative. But, you know, I do have some Energizer Bunny levels of energy. Like, it's a disservice for me to walk in there and be like the calm, like melatonin-induced version of me, because that's not who they're going to get. And so if they hire this calm person and then get me, you know, they're it's going to be a bad situation for everyone involved. So be transparent, and they need to be transparent too. If you're in that interview, and that leads me really to my third tip, which I'll say this first, is that you need to ask questions. Nail your interview by asking questions. Show that you are interested in learning about the school and how it runs, okay? And if they are holding their cards close and they're not really answering your questions, then that's a sign of a place that has something to hide, okay? A lack in transparency is a sign of hiding something, and you don't want to walk into that situation. So come prepared with questions to ask. And oftentimes at the end of the interview, they will say, do you have any questions for me? But even if they don't, I think you say, before I go, may I ask you some questions? And if you need some ideas with questions to consider, episodes 65 and 66 have a decent amount of ideas. One of the episodes is just about, you know, questions to consider when you're thinking about switching schools. And then another is specifically about if you're going to consider switching from a public to a private school and vice versa. It's just examples of questions though that you might want to ask. But some other things that are immediately coming to mind to me are asking about PLCs. Do they have professional learning communities? What are the commitments of those PLCs? How much do they do together? How much district oversight is there on the curriculum used? Or how much flexibility will I have in the instructional resources that I select for my students? What are some of the expectations of me as a part of a department? Do we do common assessments as a department? You know, do all the biology teachers have to use the same assessments? Do we all have to use the same instructional resources? Are we expected to do all of our unit plans together? These are the kinds of things you need to be thinking through. Another thing I'm thinking is, what are the extracurricular expectations? Oftentimes when you get hired, they go easy on you that first year and you don't have any. And then second year, it's like, bam, they smack you in the face with like 14 things they want you to do. And if you're like me, you may respond and say, oh no, thank you, I'm at capacity. And then they respond and say, okay, here are three things, pick one. You must pick one. Because there's that nice clause, you know, in your contract that basically says in like size 8 italic font, like, must also be willing to do anything you're asked to do that's not dictated clearly in this contract. Like, that's how they get you. That's how you become student counselor advisor or the middle school cheer coach. Okay, so be on the lookout. Ask about the extracurricular expectations. And you know what? I mean, again, I'm all about the honesty here. I don't want you to not get the job, but maybe consider if you truly have a full plate, maybe you have several children that have a lot of high needs outside of school. Maybe you're caring for one of your aging parents. You know, maybe you have some health issues that you have to really protect your boundaries and time. Maybe this is something you make clear too. Like, what are the extracurricular expectations? Because I will not be able to do anything after 4 p.m. because I got three kids or, you know, whatever it is. So I think asking these questions is really, really important to not getting hoodwinked, you know, from their perspective. We don't want it to do it to them. We don't want them to do it to us. Another thing to consider asking is, what kind of school resources are there for struggling students? I think this is a really great way to show your intentionality of caring for those students that fall behind. And then also seeing what the school has to offer in terms of partnerships with you. Because for those students that are falling behind and potentially failing and not passing your class, you cannot save them on your own. You need help and they need to help themselves, but you need other resources. And so that's where you kind of ask, what do you got? You know, I actually found out when I asked this question in one of my job interviews with the school I ended up working at was that the school had a grant from the district to have a tutoring bus. And so there was a bus every single day that left an hour later than the normal buses. The school got out at 3:45. This bus left at 4:45. And it was called the tutoring bus. And it basically took any kids that stayed late for tutoring, it gave that required public transit that used the school bus system. They got a bus ride home. And that was just the most epic thing because most of my students who needed help couldn't stay late or come early because they rode the bus. And this was a solution to that problem. And I was so pumped to hear that. And it made me really excited to teach at this school, knowing that if my students need extra help, transportation is not an obstacle. They can get the help they need because there's going to be a bus that can take them home. Another thing too is like, maybe there's a school-wide policy or program or support system already in place for failing students. You know, ask what that is. Kind of, what does this look like? Is there credit recovery? Another thing is like, if you're on a semester block schedule, one of the things one of the schools I did to help support our ELLs, our English language learners, was they didn't put them in biology and English 1 in those EOC courses first semester. They try to do the non-EOC courses first semester and then EOC courses second semester so that they had a little bit more time to hopefully get acclimated before getting pushed to take an EOC course exam. You know, so asking what the support is really helpful. Additionally, asking how admin supports teachers with classroom management and behavior issues is a question that I always like to get the answer to. I hate the concept of ISS, in-school suspension. Anytime I've ever had to go down there and just seen students sitting there sleeping on a desk instead of being in class, you know, my blood kind of boiled. You know, but at the same time, I've been in a school that had ISS and I've been in a school that hasn't. And I found that the school with ISS, it was a place that students did not want to go. And it was a helpful place for me to be able to send students that were a safety concern that got a little bit of out of control. Whereas, you know, the other school I went to is kind of like everything needs to be managed in-house and you have no place that you can send students if they get out of control. And for me as a science teacher, that's a safety issue and that's scary for me. And so these are just, again, questions that I would be asking. Maybe you think through, especially if you're currently a teacher and you're switching schools, what are your current biggest red flags? If you go back into our previous episode and think about the things you labeled red, ask about those things to see what they'll be like at this school. Those are the questions that you need to get answers to. Okay, so to nail your interview, you're going to come prepared. You're going to be honest and be yourself. You're going to ask questions. This is going to show your intentionality and your care, and it's going to give you some great insight. And then the fourth thing you're going to do is you're going to get the information you need to make your informed decision. And I think there are two things you need to ask for here. Okay. And I'm putting this as a separate tip outside of just asking questions, because I think this is so important. I would ask for a tour of the school by the admin. See if they would be willing to walk you through this school. This is an idea that came from my interview with Zach Mattson in episode 71, but he made such a good point of you learn so much from this walkthrough with an admin. If an admin actually takes you on it, because you'll see how students interact with the admin, how teachers do, it's going to give you that actual real life data to know this admin can talk culture all day, but you'll see it if they're the one who gives you the tour. The other thing is, if they offload you to someone else, like the instructional coach or, you know, another teacher, it maybe shows that they don't value, you know, your time in your interview and have the pride that they want to walk you around and show off their school to you. So that's maybe something to consider too. I'm not saying that needs to be a make it or break it, but like, to me, if an admin doesn't have time to show a potential part of their team, the school, then they probably don't have a lot of time for me once I get there. And you may be a lot more independent than me, but I need some help. And so I want admin that can help me. So I think that's a great thing to ask for. And then in addition to that, I would also ask if you could connect with someone from their science department, you know, ask for the email or phone number of someone who's in the science department already. I don't think you need to necessarily accost them on your tour of the school, but say, hey, maybe if you get taken on a tour and you go into someone's classroom, you can say, hey, could I have your contact information? I would love to follow up with questions. Or you can ask, you know, the admin as you're wrapping up the interview, hi, if I would like to reach out to another person in the department, who would you recommend I reach out to? They can give you a name and then you can look up on the school directory who they said and kind of get the scoop. Reach out to that teacher and say, hey, could I meet you for coffee? You know, get some firsthand with them. Can I bring some coffee to you? You know, or just say, hey, can we have a 20-minute phone chat on your drive home from school? I think getting that insight from someone who actually is there on a day-to-day basis is truly a game changer. All right, so those are my four tips to nail your interview. Now let's talk about your mock lesson. So I feel like this is something that's really come about in the last few years, but teachers getting asked to teach some sort of mock lesson. And sometimes this will be with a group of students, which is a little bit unhinged, honestly. I feel like it's getting thrown to the wolves to be thrown into a classroom of 20 to 30 students that you have zero rapport with. Like, you have no ability to manage them because you don't have any background context at all. But it's even more unhinged, I feel like, when you have to do this for coworkers or faculty, because I've seen that happen too. Like, hey, you're going to come back and there's going to be five of us here and we want you to teach us. Okay, that always feels just so weird too, because they're not students. But either way, this could be the case. And here's what I would encourage you to ask as you're getting prepared for this mock lesson. First, don't be afraid to ask for what they're looking for. Ask for context. Like, don't just assume that you know what they want. See what they want specifically. I would also ask for context of where the students are if you are going into a class with live, you know, adolescents, okay? Say, hey, what have they been learning? When I get here, where are they in the school year? What are things they've covered so far? Is there a certain content you would like me to cover? I would ask for a specific objective that you want them to see you meet. And you can say, hey, like, I find it really important to teach to specific objectives so that it's clear to students and myself what we're learning and what needs to be assessed later. And so that's why I'm requesting an objective to teach to. And if they're like, nope, we just want you to teach whatever, then we'll take that from here. I'll have some suggestions for you in a minute. But I would definitely ask for context, ask for an objective, and then whether they give you something or not, focus on your strengths over doing something flashy. I think sometimes we want to go in and we want to do a lab or do a demo or, you know, have this super rich discussion. But you have to remember, like, you're going in cold, okay? This is an improv acting situation with a complete cold audience that doesn't know you at all. You don't know exactly what the teaching room is going to be like, what resources are available to you. So I would avoid doing something that's going to have a lot of physical variables that are out of your control. And again, focus on your strengths and do that in your lesson. Okay, I know a lot of people don't want to lecture when they do a mock lesson, but I'll tell you this. One of my strengths is I've been told that I'm a clear communicator. And so I would put some sort of direct instruction into my lesson. You know, oftentimes these mock lessons are 15 to 20 minutes. So then if that's the case, I'm only going to be having direct instruction for 3 to 5 minutes. But if you get a full class period, a 50-minute class period, you might could do direct instruction for 15 minutes of that. Okay, so if you want to. Again, if that's not your strength, I wouldn't do it. But I've been told that I can be very engaging with direct instruction. So I would put a little bit of that in there. Now, of course, I want you to focus on your strengths. But the one thing that I think every science teacher would benefit from including in a mock lesson is inquiry. I just feel like admin eat it up. And I also just think it's a really, I mean, I hate to say that it's a unique way to teach because it shouldn't be. Like, we've been talking about inquiry for 20 years. Inquiry-based teaching should be the norm, not the exception, but it is still not the norm for a lot of admin and a lot of people. So I would do some sort of inquiry. I love the 5 E's. If you use my resources, you might be like, why don't you write your lesson plans as 5E? I don't, just because I've said this before, but I feel like they're always changing stuff. Like, some people do a 4E model, some do 5E. Other districts use different letters and acronyms, but the general concept's the same. And that's what I love about the 5E's. It's engage, explore, explain. And I would try to hit engage, explore, explain in my mock lesson. And I would acknowledge too, I would write up a lesson plan that you pass out when you're doing this to the admin. And I would say, hey, we're not going to have time to get to elaborate and evaluate in one day or, you know, one mini lesson. But this is how I would follow up with this afterwards if I was teaching this in real life. But I would try to hit that engage, explore, explain. I think discussion is great because it makes it more student-centric. But I also think discussion is hard with virtual strangers. Remember, you don't know these kids, they don't know you. So I think if you want to include discussion, I love it. But I would see if you can get a class roster before your mock lesson, or ask the teacher that you're stepping in for if they have, you know, what I love, which is a bag of popsicle sticks with every kid's name on it. See if they have something like that. And if not, see if you can get a roster and cut up the names on slips of paper and bring that in with you. So that when you ask questions, if you get absolute silence back, you can draw a name and say, okay, Casey, what do you think about this? And actually call the students out, because engaging the students is the most important thing to show that you can do, I feel like, but it's also one of the hardest things to do, again, with strangers. So you're just going to try to do your best. And I think that's a tool you can use to walk in and do your best. All right, now, last thing I'll say is, let's say they're just telling you, teach on whatever you want. You can do anything. And you're expected to walk in with no context for their prior knowledge and teach some random one-off lesson. These are my 3 recommendations that are content specific for what I would tell you to do for your mock lesson. Okay, are you ready? 2 of them are free. 1 is a paid thing. So just take that with a grain of salt. So first thing is a freebie I have in my TBT store. It's about the characteristics of life. This is what I would do for any sort of biology class that I was stepping into, whether it's biology, life science, environmental, anatomy. I think this would be a useful resource. So essentially, the whole thing will guide you through this. I'll link it in the show notes, but I tell you in the teacher notes, you're basically going to start off by asking them to come up with a list of characteristics for what it means to be alive. And then you'll ask questions, you'll kind of pop around, you'll have them consult their list with a partner, then you'll kind of collect a class list and you'll write it on the whiteboard. Then you're going to pass out these little baggies of cards that have pictures on them of a bunch of different things. And you're going to ask them and a neighbor to sort them into categories of living and non-living things. Then you'll come together. You're going to try to come up with a master categorization. Then you're going to revisit your list of what it takes to be a living thing and try to get it down to as few items as possible. Then you'll kind of wrap up with a little mini lecture on the characteristics of life. It's so simple. It's student-centric, but it keeps you as a leader. It's inquiry-based. And again, this is a refresher that even a junior in high school taking anatomy and physiology could have, because they may not remember this, you know, from middle school life science. So I love, love, love that characteristics of life resource, and it's in my TBT store. The second thing I have for you is another freebie. This is like a resource you get from joining my email list, and it is for chemistry. So if you're interviewing for some sort of chemistry position, it is an introduction to matter inquiry activity. So I use this in my first unit in my chemistry curriculum, which is Introduction to Chemistry. This is an introductory resource to concept 3, which is where we start talking about matter and we review the characteristics and property and classifications of matter. And this is a little inquiry activity for that. It gets students out of their seats. It gets them talking. It gets them debating. And then again, you can follow up with a little bit of direct instruction at the end if you would like. Also, one of those things that you could have a student, again, that's an upperclassman chemistry student, and they can't truly articulate to you what the difference is between an atom and an element. Okay. And this resource, this inquiry activity is going to force them to do that. So it's a great one. And I'll link that in the show notes as well. And then my last resource that I recommend for like a one-off lesson is would be if you're doing like a physics job interview and you're supposed to do a physics lesson. This is a hard one because again, physics is like so quantitative and with no context for what they've already learned, it's hard to think of something that's one-off that has no prior knowledge and that doesn't require a lot of materials. But I think getting them to do something hands-on and explorative is the most important thing. So I have these motion and force lab stations that are from when I taught physical science, but they could work for, you know, senior physics too. They require really simple materials. So all you would need to bring in would be the printed stations. And then you might have like a duffel bag with resources that you truly can collect from around your house. You can set them up around the classroom in 30 seconds. Students basically can walk around with a piece of notebook paper. They kind of do an experience at each station. They experience a motion and force phenomena, and then they answer questions at that station about it. Then you can circle back together, talk about them, review them, talk about what they can learn about motion and force from these stations. It's super simple, but it's going to give you an opportunity to float around, interact with students. You know, it's going to show what kind of instructional resources you can use. And again, it's going to make that focus on inquiry, which I think all admin just like eat up. They love it. Okay. So all of that to say, in short, let's nail your interview by coming prepared, being honest and being yourself, asking questions and getting that tour and that contact info for someone who works at the school. And then if you need help with a mock lesson, check out one of those 3 that I will link in the show notes, which you can find at itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/episode122. And I would love it if you haven't already. I do not monetize this podcast at all. It's a lot of time to do it and put it on, but I think it's worth it. And I love, you know, connecting with you guys in this way. So one of the ways, if you love this podcast and you want to support this podcast, if you leave a review, especially if you use Apple Podcasts, it truly makes a big difference in just searchability and the podcast growing in popularity. So leave a review today if you haven't already, and especially if you have an interview coming up and you're excited to put some of these strategies to use. All right, teacher friends, that wraps up today's episode. If you're looking for an easy way to start simplifying your life as a secondary science teacher, head to itsnotrocketscienceclassroom.com/challenge to grab your classroom reset challenge. And guess what? It's totally free. Thanks so much for tuning in, and I'll see you here next week. Until then, I'll be rooting for you, teacher friend.